Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Practicing Shaivam, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalaichelvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Vinnalum Devarkum Melaya Vediyanai, Mannalum Mannavarkum Manbahi Nindranai, தன்னார் தமிழளிக்கும் தன்பாண்டி நாட்டானை பெண்ணாடும் பாகனை பேணு பெருந்துறையில் கண்ணார் கடல்காட்டி நாயேனை ஆட்கொண்ட அண்ணாமலையானை பாடுதுங்கான் அம்மானாய் ஓட்டை மாடத்தில் ஒன்பது வாசலும் காட்டில் வேவதன் முன்னம் கடலடி நாட்டி நான்மலர் தூவி வலம் செய்யில் வாட்டம் தீர்த்திடும் வான்மியூர் ஈசனே நீரூரும் செஞ்சடையாய் நெற்றிக் கண்ணாய் நிலாத்திங்கள் துண்டத்தாய் நின்னை தேடி ஓரூரும் ஒழியாமே ஒற்றித்து எங்கும் உலகமெலாம் திரிதந்தும் நின்னை காண்பான் தேரூரும் நெடுவீதி பற்றி நின்று திருமாலும் நான்முகனும் தேர்ந்தும் காணாது ஆரூரா ஆரூரா என்கின்றார்கள் அமரதம் பெருமானே ஆரூராயே கார்புறவும் கருங்கூந்தல் செவ்வாய் வெண்ணகை பச்சை கன்னியொடும் தாழ்கமல் பூங்காந்தளந்தோர் குமரனொடும் மணிசிங்காதனத்துமேவிச் சீர்பரவுவான் புலவர் நினைந்தன யாவையும் நல்கி சிறப்பின் வைகும் வார்புணல் சூழ் வயல் கமலை தேவர்கள் சிந்தாமணியை மனத்துள் வைப்பாம் வித் பிளஸிங்ஸ் ஆஃப் Sri Ajabanadana Kamala Vasanta Tyagaraja Swami and the Acharyas, I take great pleasure in presenting the 10th day series, the last day lecture of the series, an overview of Shaivism and Siddhanta organized by Shaivam.org. Before I begin today's session, I would like to make a small clarification about yesterday evening's lecture. Almost near the fair end of it, in the last 2-3 minutes, I committed a major error in explaining the story of Kochengod Cholan, which I realized much later. At the Jambukeshwara Kshetram, going by the Purana, an elephant and a spider was worshipping the Moola Lingam there, and the spider had its own way of building a cobweb, a kind of a pandal on top of the Shivalingam to ensure that the feathers and the dry leaves and other things did not fall on him, the Moola Lingam, and the elephant there brought water, carried water in its trunk from the Kaveri and did an Abhishekam. An elephant always thought that the cobweb is more like a disturbance for the purity of the puja, and so got it removed every day, and the spider kept repeating to weave the cobweb every day. And finally, one day the spider also understood that the elephant is removing it off, removing the web that it has built. So when this was on, the spider went into the trunk to cause harm to the elephant. The elephant, without knowing what to do, with an unbearable pain, got itself relieved from the earth by beating the trunk on the ground, and both the spider and the elephant die, and the elephant, because of its service to Parameshwara, attains liberation, while the spider gets another birth. But going by the fact that it has done Shiva Puja, or it has supported Shiva Puja for a very long time, it was blessed to be born as a king in the mighty Chola army, and it was blessed with the power and command to build so many Shiva temples on the banks of Kaveri River that many people could go worship. And it turned out to be a channel for cultivating Shiva Punyam to other people. So that spider, which was reborn in the Chola monarch, is Kochengod Cholan, who went on to become a Nayanmar. So I thought I should make this clarification. It was my error, and so I'm getting that clarified here first. Going on with today's session, it's been a long journey ever since we started. We've been discussing about religions, why do we need a religion, the reason for the religion, how it has evolved over different parts of the world, and how Shaivism, out of all, is considered to be one of the most ancient and still functioning religion, which is still put to practice, and how it has taken the Vedas as its ground to groom itself. The Acharyas generally consider the Vedas to be the root that holds on, the tree called Shaivam, from which things have branched out. So the Vedas were there, and the Vedanta, the Upanishad part, and how Itihasas and Puranas also stood by the same avenue, making things more clarified. Finally, we have the Agamas, which are extremely specific, which reflect the theology of Shaiva Siddhanta, the theories of Shaiva Siddhanta, as seen through the Vedas. And as we know, Vedas are a general compilation which has a lot of information in it, and with all the constraints of language and the volume and all that, Shiva, out of his mercy, gave us the Agamas. He himself is believed to have sermon the Agamas to Uma Parvati. Through her, it is the Guru Parampara that has got it. Then we saw about the different schools of Shaivism, where the concept of Siddhanta seems to overlap with other schools also, namely Kashmir Shaivism. Veera Shaivam also has its root from the Agamas, because the qualities of a Veera Shaivite and his activities, the way they perceive Shiva Puja and all that, is also finds mentions here and there in the Agamas. Of different types of Shaivites, the Veera Shaivites are also mentioned. And then we saw about, more specific about the Siddhanta, wherein we got to know about the Tirumurais, which are also extracted as concepts from the Agamas, and how the Tirumurais have the authority to bring out the experience that some of the chosen blessed souls, the Nayanmars, and in particular the Nalvar Perumakkal or Upper Sambandar, Sundarar and Manikavachakar, how they travelled the length and breadth of the country and got all their divine experiences documented as songs for us. Then more stories about the Nayanmars, who showed their love for Shiva and his devotees, an uninterrupted commitment with which they served Shiva and his devotees, and how even when they were put to tests, very severe tests, they stood by their dharma and were liberated, and how their stories become a sort of inspiration for us to follow and take into account when it comes to striving through challenges. And then we saw about the Agamas in general, about the types and all that also. As an extension to the Tirumurai and the Siddhanta school, we have the more specific concepts of Siddhantas authored as the 14 Shastra works, through which the basics of Siddhanta are best explained, and how the Guru Parampara of Maikantar, starting from Maikantar, got itself established here to express the concept of Siddhanta in Tamil, and how Siddhanta is a pan-Indian concept. And here in Tamil Nadu, Tamil becomes the regional language, and it was used by all these Siddhanta Acharyas to make it easy for the local population also to understand it. The Siddhanta in its original form is always a reflection of the concepts as sung by the Acharyas in Tirumurai, the Samayacharyas in the 12 Tirumurais, who in turn have an in-depth knowledge of the Agamas, where they have interpreted the Agamas through their experiences. The Agamas are nothing but what is given as specific instruction as picked up, and the essence from the Vedas. So that is how the long tradition starting from the Vedas reaches the Siddhanta Shastra works. So the 14 Siddhanta Shastras, the most important being Shivajnana Bodham, started by Maikanta Shivam, and how the tradition following Maikanta Shivam, we had Arunandi Shivam, Maranyana Deya Sambandar, followed by Umapati Shivam, and how through Umapati Shivam we have several schools of Shaiva Siddhanta active today here in Tamil Nadu, and how they have taken up their course in the last 500 odd years of documented history, how the Acharyas of various mutts have stood to safeguard the tradition by authoring a lot of works and ensured that the Siddhanta tradition is propagated here in South India. Today the last session is going to be on how to the most important practices for a Shaiva Siddhantin. We've seen the different schools of Shaivam, which also included a few schools like the Pashupata Shaivas, from whom you had the branches of Kapalikas, and the Kalamukas has an independent school too. So how their traditions have been there. So whatever school of thought that you pick, especially when it comes to practicing a religion, there are laid out principles, properly given manuals that are to be followed to put it into practice. So the philosophy is there, that is core theory as we have for us to learn, and in order to inculcate some profit out of it, or to apply the theory and ensure, especially because this deals with the concept of liberations and causing the end to all the sufferings and all that, it has got to be followed too. So in order, the Acharyas, who have been extremely merciful again, have taken the pains to give a grammar to a Shaivite's way of life, as it would help to apply the philosophical rules more easily in his long journey, constant practice of which over a point of time will help the Atma mature, take it to a level where everything that it does is to be seen as a reflection of what the principles in the Shastras tell us. So he follows a guidebook when he puts these things to practice. So the important aspects when it comes to practicing the lifestyle for a Shaiva Siddhanta is the topic for today. we've seen about the four different paths or the four different modes for expressing one's devotion, the Chariyai, Kriyai, Yogam and Jnanam, and how clearly each one of the Nalvar devotees lived the life the way that they took for us to understand more easily. Bhakti as a very effective tool needs to be put to practice, and for mundane beings these are to be learnt and practiced. So there is always an emphasis in the way you carry yourself and express your devotion, especially in the beginning stages when the individual is not prepared to control his senses or to understand deeper concepts like how the physique is it's temporary, the physical self as you see is temporary, and the impurities that binds you to this universe has got to be cleansed through activities that will earn you Shiva Punyam. And so at each level of our life, how do we handle it? We need to keep ourselves fixed into a framework, at least in the beginning stages. So that's why we say the puja that you do, for example, you get your Diksha and your Acharya initiates you into performing a Shiva Puja. In the initial level, a simple practice, and then as we progress, more elaborate rituals are also taught to us. So as you progress, at a point of time when you can start envisioning the Murti without the Bairam there, the Shivalingam as an entity there, that is when you start practicing your yoga by performing all these rituals from within. All the Upacharas to be performed, all the Nyasam and everything to be performed, step by step can be performed from within without any. So you can offer food. So what is it that you offer as food? And what is it that you offer as Dupa, Deepa and all that? And you know, salute the Murti from within takes you to the next level. So this level to reach will demand that an actual Shiva Puja ritual is performed with all the required equipments and the necessary materials to perform a puja. It's only this kind of a regular practice helps you, seasons you, gets you more matured to handle more complicated stretch in your journey. So this helps in the Atma for its maturity. There is absolutely no difference in any of the services performed, as we've been seeing from the day we started talking about the parts of an agama. Whether you take the Chariya Margam or the Kriya or the Yoga or Jnana, there is absolutely no difference in it, because our own Samayacharyas, each of them have stood at a level. But the way you express that path, the way you explore that path, all the acts that you do and the experiences that you gain has got to be properly governed. And that is where they give us the rules. If you're choosing, say for example, the Chariya Margam of serving to the Lord, you know, there are certain restrictions to it. How do you serve? What do you serve and all that? So when you're going to breach that, that's where the problem starts. And that is exactly where the first and the most severe impurity of Anava acts on us. So starting with the basics of the three great symbols that helps you define a Shaivite. Generally, these texts speaks about many aspects or attributes that are associated with the Shaiva. And this differs from school to school. When we were discussing about the Kalamukha tradition, I was telling you about how they have the process of applying a black paste as a vertical line on their forehead. And they are supposed to wear Spatika Kuntalam and Spatika Mala. And also about the way they weave their own sacred thread to be worn across their chest. So all of these traditions, the way you dress up yourself is to be understood. Now there are people who question that dressing and other things aren't required. Yes, that is true when one has reached a level of a very, very balanced vision of not seeing differences with anything. That is a level when you have already given up on all the physical bondings or emotions and relationship bondings and other things, and you purely see only Shiva. Once the person, the individual is mature to that level, maybe all of this takes a second, takes a backseat. But till then, all these traditions are important to ensure that you don't slip, that an individual does not slip through this process, because the malas are always ready concealing us. And that is how the atmas have been. They are dependent on the anavamalam especially, which gives rise to the other two obviously. So in order to win over it, these strict rules are necessary in the beginning stages for sure. So the three important primary attributes or symbols that by itself, by the vision of these, when you can see Shiva, the objects are Bhasma, the sacred ash, Rudraksha beads and the Shiva Panchakshara mantram. So all these three are extremely important. It is in fact a part of the Dikshai in many schools when the Acharya actually blesses you with a brass cup full of Vibhuti or Bhasma and Rudraksha to be worn and the Shiva Panchakshara mantra. Of course, the Sushma Panchakshara is given. So the way these three are, one, the moment you are introduced into it, all these three are to be given. So starting from Bhasma, of course, it is the Vedic ritual, the ashes from Vedic ritual that are to be worn. Of course, there are direct references which speaks about how Shiva himself collects the ashes from the cremation grounds and wears. That is to be understood as act of Shiva when he performs the Samhara. When everything is disrupted, he takes it up all on him. And that is what is to be understood by smearing the ashes from cremation ground. It is a metaphor to be understood. Yes, there are schools of Shaivism which still prescribes to visit cremation grounds to collect it from the cremated, the platform where cremation happens and wear it. But that is what is not is prescribed in the Siddhanta schools. There is an elaborate process that has got to be followed to prepare Bhasma as it is. So there are the kind of cows that are to be chosen, the kind of grass that they are to be fed, and the time period where the Goshanam is to be collected, the cow dung, and dried, and the month of Kartika where it has got to be, you know, collected and dried. And during Shivaratri, a little before Shivaratri, that's a good 3-4 months of time when it has got to be burnt and the ashes collected, sieved, cleaned and stored for usage. So that's why we are very, very particular about the source from which we get our Bhasma. Thankfully, there are a lot of schools, a lot of Goshalas and Ashramas where they have started manufacturing it in the prescribed fashion. So it's always safe to buy it from them. And Shiva Bhasma, the way you prepare it is as important as the way you wear it. So please be sure about where you are procuring your Bhasma from. Then the ways of wearing it, the number of places you wear it. There are two ways predominantly. One is applying it as a dry powder, or the other is to mix it with water and wear it. However you smear it, there is an elaborate process there also. Brass has got to be stored in a vessel without a lid. That's another common principle. The way, the place where you position it, you're not supposed to keep it in the ground. There are traditions where the acharyas and people with dikshay always carry a sachet of Bhasma with them wherever they travel. We have known all that even a couple of generations back in our own family. We're just trying to bring all this back. When our elders always, wherever they go, as a part of their dress and attire, they carry a small silk pouch with Bhasma in it and offer it to young people who take their blessings. So it is with that they do. And so the way you apply it, the direction that you sit facing, and you know, how you install the brass pot of Bhasma in front of you, the fingers that you use to take it, apply it, and all that. So all of this has got to be respected in order to inculcate a sense of respect to Bhasma as Shiva himself. So when you actually see a pot full of Bhasma, it is to be respected as much as Shiva himself. There is no doubt in that. And so that's how it is. And then you have Rudraksha and the number of phases to it and all. As the name goes, it just means the eyes of Shiva. So it's as divine as the eyeballs of Shiva. So when you wear it, it just means that you've gotten into a connect through an indirect, through a mean, of course, through that there is a means through which, a medium through which you have got connected. So wearing it also requires as much as purity as smearing yourself with Bhasma. So the number of phases to be worn and all that has also been documented through several works. There are exclusive books which speaks about the vidhi or the rules to be followed when you wear your Rudraksha mala. Where exactly do you wear, how many beads to wear, when to wear, when not to, and all that. There are schools which emphasize one Rudraksha bead at least permanently worn around their neck, in close connect with their neck, and that is a mandate. There are schools which says that's not a mandate and you're not supposed to be wearing Rudraksha during when you're doing your ablutions and other things. So these kind of traditions vary. I'm only talking about generic rules. It's always best to get these things clarified from one's own guru. Finally, the Shiva Panchakshara mantra, how it is a part of the Yajurveda, and how, you know, the Shiva Panchaksharam has been established as the central seed from which all the Vedas germinated. So the Panchakshara mantra is considered to be the seed from which everything germinated. So when we say the Vedas, it also represents the activities that Parameshwara himself performs. And the Panchakritiyam as it is represented through the Panchaksharam. There are different ways in which the five syllables are arranged, and each of it has a different meaning. and all that is to be understood at a more matured level. Shivapanchaksharam as such, where there is two possibilities, where the Namah Shabdam goes as a prefix or as a suffix, or as a suffix. So this kind of varies the Stula Panchaksharam and the Sushma Panchaksharam as it is called. As you can recall how Manikavasaka Peruman, immediately after his Deeksha, he starts Shivapuranam by chanting Namah Shivaya. But later on he goes on to say, I chanted Shivaya Namah. So the difference between both, that is also to be understood as a spiritual message. So I am leaving it here. I am not going into that details given the scope of this lecture. So the difference in it, and as it has got to be taken from an acharya and chanted with reverence. So there are several objects that are to be worshipped at par with Shiva himself. These three are the primary ones. So the Bhasma, Rudraksha and Panchakshara. The Shaivites who are initiated, especially in the Siddhanta school, are supposed to be wearing their Bhasma in the way they have been advised as per their guru. The number of places, the way, whether it's a dry powder or you smear it as a paste, all that. So that is there. Secondly, they are to be wearing Rudraksha wherever prescribed, how many ever beads as prescribed by their acharyas. Third, the chant of Sivapanchakshara mantram has been made extremely important. It used to be a highly safeguarded mantra, and without an initiation, the tradition is people wouldn't chant it. That is exactly why our acharyas, Samayacharyas especially, took the job of writing Tirumurai songs, composing Tirumurai songs, which explores the greatness of the Panchakshara mantra, which can be chanted, which can be sung by the devotees before their initiation. And the devotion that you gain by that, with the chanting of the padigams, will help you to be chosen by an acharya, to be initiated into the mantra, after which, as a tradition, you chant it. Till then, the Panchakshara mantra has got to be definitely received as a upadesam from the acharyas. Then, when all of this, the initiation becomes the code, the core part. So you have for Bhasmadharanam the regular way, the Rudraksham the regular way, and to chant the Panchakshara mantram, you need an acharya. That is why in Shaiva traditions, the acharya is put at par with Shiva himself. He is considered to be that special soul which has been permitted by Shiva to reach a level through whom Parameshwara connects with us. That's exactly how an acharya is to be looked upon. So the relationship between a guru and a sishya is being celebrated through several songs, especially in the Shastra texts, and so in Thirumolar Thirumantram. So many songs, exclusive titles, only to express the greatness of a guru and what makes him to be considered as Shiva himself. And the most common one being Guruve Sivamena Kurinan Nandi, which means guru is none but Parameshwara himself. In fact, guru, when he is here and when we are with them, they are to be considered someone more important than Shiva himself, because when you commit a Shiva Droham, a sin against Shiva's wish or will, or to a Shiva temple or to a Shiva devotee, you can always seek apologies at the holy feet of one's guru, request him to tell a prayaschitta or a way to cleanse you of the sins. But if you've commit a sin against the wills of your own guru, there is absolutely no one but for the guru himself again to safeguard you. So even if it is a Shiva Droham, you have the guru to help you. But when it is a Guru Droham, then it becomes a serious issue. So worshipping one's guru at par with Shiva is extremely important. That is why till date, it is through him we are connected. If you look at the lineage of each of these Guru Paramparas, the Guru Peetams that we have here, the Madams or the schools where the Acharyas are Grihasthas, their lineage will take you somewhere through a lot of people to Umapati Shivam or one of the Acharyas in a few cases, but Maikandar will be there for sure. So it's a direct connect to Maikandar. From Maikandar we know how the parampara is again taken over all the way to Parameshwara himself. That is how sacred they are. So receiving one's your initiation or any Upadesa, Deeksha from your guru will mean that you are being initiated by none less than Parameshwara himself. Of course, the qualities of being a good guru and a good sishyan and all that has been elaborately detailed out. And the rituals that are accompanied in attaining to, the status of becoming a guru through the abhishekams that are to be performed when one becomes a guru and all that is also the acharya abhishekam. All that is clearly referred to in the agamas. Getting diksha from a guru is extremely important. Used to be the times when out of all the good deeds that you do, you fall in the vision of the Jnana Drishti of an Acharya who takes immense care on this soul and invites it over to give its initiation. But you know, given the way we our lifestyle and all that have changed, we at least attach ourselves to a Gurupeed. Be loyal to them, serve them and all that till the time that they think that the soul needs to be protected and prevented from the vicious cycle of life and birth and gets you initiated. And Diksha is the process, as it is called. There are three different levels of Diksha, the Samaya, Visesha and Nirvana Diksha. Each of it is, the Samaya is like the basic Diksha where you are initiated into the Panchakshara Mantram, given your Rudraksham and the traditions to be followed and all that. And then when that goes on for several years, we are not sure when, it is completely, the discretion is with the Guru to understand through your activities that you are matured enough to the next level. From Samaya it goes on to the Visesha Diksha, from which the Nirvana Diksha, the final Diksha is given. So it is completely with the Guru to see you and evaluate you and understand your progress and promote you to the spiritually next plane. Then, so once you're initiated, you start performing regular ritual activities like chanting the Panchakshara Mantra, visiting temples, attending gatherings of devotees, and how with more devotees around, you're always tuned to think about good things. It's only in the company, because company is also extremely important. The kind of people who surround you has a direct impact on the individual. We all know that psychologically, medically and all that. So, to be surrounded by Shiva devotees is also important. That is why at the next level you have the concept of worshipping the devotees also. So, chanting Shiva's name, learning more about Shiva Puranam and all the great stories, the Puranas, episodes from the Puranas which speaks about the greatness of Parameshwara and how he comes rushing to help his devotees and all that, will keep you completely in thought of Parameshwara, and that is why you need the company of Bhaktas with you always. And once the Guru feels that the individual can start performing a Shiva Puja, that's when they are initiated into the Puja traditions. Generally, without the Diksha for performing Shiva Puja, one cannot perform. But because of one's own bhakti, maybe a simple puja to a photograph or something is what people start doing. But to actually have a Banalingam or a Spatikalingam and all that, it is a process that has got to be followed by the divine command of the Guru. And it is through him we receive the Murti also to be installed and start worshipping. The need for Shiva Puja, yes, it is extremely important. And Acharyas have stressed about performing Shiva Puja for a simple reason, that a daily allocation of time as a conversation between you and Parameshwara helps you mature in a more faster way. The way the Atma is tuned to receive the grace more often. So it's a direct conversation one has with Parameshwara, because every time you start it, you start by worshipping all the devas who are in service of Shiva, like Ganapati and all the Acharyas, Surya and all of them. And so all these other deities, we understand they are in the service of Parameshwara and Shiva has commanded them to perform their own activities. Then we go on to Nandi and Devi and all of them, and finally the worship for Parameshwara, where you envision that formless supreme power in the Shivalingam for a simple reason, that it has been gifted by your Acharya and your Acharya has seen Shiva in it. So we are supposed to look at it that way and offer all the services to Shiva, the various Abhishekams to be performed, and every time you do it, you keep chanting the Vedas or the Tirumurai and Shri Rudram and other, all that, the different parts of Vedas and Upanishads and all that, as you perform the Shiva Puja, your humility increases. Now this is from my own personal experience. As once you become regular in performing the Shiva Puja, come whatever, your humility and an urge to submit in front of the Supreme Lord without any questions and being with, there is no ambiguity as to whether there is someone as powerful as Shiva, or whether you can challenge him, or whether is there a God, and all these confusions which are brought in because we are dependent on things that are not to be dependent on, all this is cleansed off. So every time you start serving him more and more. So doing a Shiva Puja, and as I told you, it is a tradition up until, in some cases even the Diksha for Shiva Puja is done, but before getting a Murti to perform an Abhishekam, the Acharya's commands are to go into making a Shivalingam every day with turmeric or sandalwood or clay from clean places and do Bhavanabhishekam and regular pujas and immerse the murti every day. So once you become a little more regular in all that, that is when an acharya gifts you with a Shivalingam to be installed and performing puja. There are several accounts, not from old, I mean not from ancient past, but even within the last one century or so, as to how people used to carry their Shiva puja wherever they traveled. There were exclusively prepared boxes in which all the puja material, the murti, all requirements were all packed, carried along. And we see in so many works of Uwe Swaminath Iyer and Meenakshi Sundaram Pillai and such great souls referring to scenes where a lot of people were performing Shiva puja in the banks of tanks and rivers and all that. So whenever they travel, they carry it. Wherever they stay, the Shiva murti is with them, the puja petti as we call it, the puja box is with them. They wake up, they have their bath and clean themselves. The first thing that they do immediately is to apply bhasma and rudraksha and start doing their Shiva puja. So that has been a part and parcel of regular life till even a century back. And so if it's been a tradition, I sincerely request people, because it's one easy way to come out of the troubles that one faces, is to perform Shiva puja, to get yourself initiated and start continuing the tradition of performing Shiva puja. And of course, the Shivalinga Murtam is what is the most prescribed and the most popular form of murti when it comes to worshipping. And here in the case, I've told you about how the Shivalingam is to be interpreted as that tall, glowing pillar of fire with no point of origin or an end point, as Shiva stood in front of Brahma and Vishnu. And that is a representation of the endless nature of Shiva, the glowing brilliance of Shiva. And you know, to understand, there is even the capacity of Brahma or Vishnu, because they were egoistic, couldn't understand the greatness of Shiva. So it is in front of that pillar of brilliant glowing fire that we submit ourselves. It's the fire that can cleanse anything and absorb within itself people who offer themselves. And so the Shivalingam worship takes precedence than the other forms. And especially when you're at home and other things, the simplest form to start worshipping is that of a Shivalingam.